The court calls United States v. Buford. This is a certified case. The government will go first.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chief Judge Baker. May it please the court. I'm Captain Thomas Alford, along with Lieutenant Colonel Catherine Oler, represent the United States in this case. And with your permission, Chief Judge Baker, I'd like to request 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Granted.
Thank you. The military judge below erroneously concluded that an off-duty security forces gate guard who had never conducted and had no training in investigations and who was not acting pursuant to his duties or in furtherance of his superior's orders was acting as an agent for the government. In reaching this conclusion, the military judge abused her discretion by disregarding several exceptions to Military Rule of Evidence 311 and resting her opinion exclusively on some language from the pre-MRE case of United States versus Vellante. Moreover, the evidence at issue in this case, 3 electronic devices, an HP laptop, a Dell laptop, and a Centon flash drive, were searched and seized either pursuant to lawful consent or lawful search authorities. But even without those lawful justifications, the search and seizure of the evidence at issue was proper because nearly every single exception to the warrant requirement applied in this case. First and most important, on 17 May of 2012, Mr. Marlowe, I'll refer to him as Airman First Class Marlowe, was a private actor. In U.S. v. Jacobson, the Supreme Court said that a private invasion, whether accidental or deliberate, reasonable or unreasonable, does not violate the Fourth Amendment because of its private character. Now, I say Airman First Class was a private actor because, and this is his testimony from the Joint Appendix, pages 57 to 98 and 107 to 128.
Just to set the table, which case or cases do you think are most important in terms of determining whether someone is acting in a governmental capacity or as a government agent? I'm sure you're about to tell us why he was or was not a government agent, but what cases are you relying on? And are they the same cases that the military judge relied on?
Yes, Chief Judge Baker. So it would be U.S. v. Daniels would be one case, U.S. v. Port, U.S. v. Reister, United States versus Vellante.
So the cases from your brief?
Yes, sir, and then also from our supplemental authority, which was the case, the recent case from this court, U.S. v. Jones. Even though that was an Article 31 type situation, the military judge in that case, this court affirmed the decision to use an objective test. So looking at the totality of the circumstances with an objective test, we would encourage this court to use that same standard, that objective test from Daniels, where you don't look at the private motivation of the person, you look at the totality of the circumstances.
Well, if you look at the totality of the circumstances here, everything he did seemed to be for the benefit of the government. He said he was collecting this stuff for proof, to preserve evidence because it should be taken to SP investigations. His, quote, cop training kicked in, da-da-da-da-da. So if you look at the totality of the circumstances, he certainly looks, smells, and quacks like a government actor, doesn't he?
Yes, Judge Stuckey, I think that those are important factors for this court to consider.
One would think so.
They are, but again, the issues that you raise have to deal with primarily his private motivations. Now, any time an off-duty law enforcement officer or any time an off-duty security forces member encounters some kind of law enforcement situation, naturally...
Is he supposed to walk away from it?
Well, I guess that's Appelli's argument, because naturally they're going to want to collect evidence, or that's going to be their...
Well, but the government can't have it both ways. It can't get the benefit of what he collects and then say, oh, well, he's not our guy. He's got your AFFC. He performs security duties. He's not a law enforcement guy. He's a security guy. He guards airplanes. But if you haven't been an Air Force JAG or an Air Force cop, that is the distinction that's utterly lost.
That's correct, Your Honor. I think when you look at those factors, the fact on cross-examination where he testified, yes, certain things would indicate that he was collecting proof. You also have to do that with...
Well, he said more than certain things would indicate. He said he was.
Can you go back and, before you get dragged down the rabbit hole of whether this fact or that fact is the most important, So far, I understand your test, where it comes from, that it's objective and it applies our totality of circumstance, correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
What's the substance of it? So I'm being objective, but what am I objectively assessing?
The assessment is you're determining whether or not, as a matter of law, that person is actually acting as a law enforcement officer.
Well, if it's an objective test, it's A, from whose vantage point, and B, based on what's facts.
I think ultimately it would be from a reasonable person, and obviously then the military judge is put in that position to make that determination, what is a reasonable
person. You said law enforcement officer. Isn't it government agent? I mean, what if, like in Daniels, they sent a junior enlisted person back in at the direction of the government? Nobody was arguing he was a law enforcement person, but he was acting at the direction of the government.
I think I misspoke, Your Honor. I didn't mean government agent. And this court has found in certain cases that your motivations, the whole reason why you're doing something, like in Reister and in Daniels, that those motivations don't automatically transform you as an agent of the government. But even if you're acting there, even if you're looking at his motivations, the facts surrounding this situation, he says on page 113, I was acting on my own and not at the direction of a supervisor.
He says a lot of different things on the two different days. Would you agree with that?
Yes, Your Honor.
What do you think if we do about the vantage point of the wife? I mean, what does her vantage point have to do with your, if anything, with your objective test?
I think that is one factor that this court has to consider, is what she was looking at. But I guess there's two prongs to that, Judge Ryan, and that's that, number one, she did say that Airman Marlowe did say that he thought she came to him because she knew he was in security forces. So that is a fact. But that also goes to whether or not she was inclined then to report the crime to begin with, and whether she was an independent source, and that she was going to go to the police anyway, whether or not this search occurred. And I'll get to that point in a minute, Your Honor. But he also said, and I quote, I was trying to help a friend, and he didn't intend to act as law enforcement. That's on page 113. And it's important to note, too, that he was present at this house as a lawnmower repairman. He wasn't called to the scene. He was dragged into a situation that he didn't even really want to be in.
Well, just to be clear, you're not saying he's a lawnmower repairman. He was there to fix a lawnmower, correct?
That's correct.
But he didn't have, like, a side business of being a lawnmower repairman?
No, Your Honor, no.
Okay. So he was there to drink beers and fix a lawnmower?
Yes, Your Honor, to smoke and to do that with Ms. Hammond's husband.
Where is he physically located?
On
or off base? His base? Somebody else's base? Where is this physically taking place?
This is on
the Hammond house.
This is on base, Your Honor, and it was at the Hammond's home.
And is this the same base that he's posted at, or a different base?
It's the same base, Your Honor. RAF Lake and Heath. Also, he had no training in investigations. He never acted as an investigator. He had no training in search authorization. That's on page 59 and 108. And what's important here, too, is once he actually saw these images of underage girls, he himself didn't even know what to do. He didn't call supervisor. If he was law enforcement, he would have actually said, okay, I need to route this up the chain. But what did he do? He left it up to her to make the decision whether or not she wanted to report it. And so ultimately, she was the one who pushed this forward. And he said, actually, when he was asked, if she didn't want to go forward, would you have pushed it? And his answer was no. Actually, it was absolutely not. That's on page 114. And also, if he was the police, if he actually was law enforcement or an agent of the government, why would he need to encourage her then to go to law enforcement if he knew what he was doing and if he knew the proper processes and everything?
Well, we've danced around this thing, but you haven't gotten yet to why the judge abused his discretion in finding the opposite.
Your Honor, I think the judge used the test from Volante, which was the later cases, which said that it is an objective test, so it's not a subjective test.
Well, even under an objective test, the appearances are pretty clear that he thought he was doing something governmental, and he said so. So how did the judge abuse his discretion?
Why don't you go through the findings of fact and conclusions of law and indicate in what manner, if at all, the military judge abused her discretion or got the law wrong or whatever?
Your Honor, I think there's...
Especially on an Article 62, you have to indicate in what manner what matters of law have been messed up.
Absolutely, Your Honor.
It's a technical term.
The entire focus in both the initial ruling and then on the ruling for reconsideration was completely on his private motivations. And she also made the finding of fact that Mr. Marlowe, quote, took it upon himself to make screenshots of what he saw on the Facebook page, as well as what was in the message section. That's on page 181. That is not true. AB was the one who directed him. She was the one who was initially taking screenshots, so he wasn't even...
But that sounds like you're arguing fact. What's the error of law there?
Well, that's an erroneous factual conclusion, Your Honor. But as far as the conclusion of law, she doesn't... The only case that she really focuses on is Belante. So it's not so much that she made an erroneous legal conclusions in her writing. What she did is she didn't make a lot of these... She didn't even make the analysis at all. For example, she didn't make the analysis, or when she did do some analyses, it was only a conclusory statement. So that's where the real issues are, Your Honor. And if I could move on to the second point, even if you find that Airman Marlowe was indeed a law enforcement or acting on behalf
Counsel,
of the government...
Can I stop you before you go on?
Yes, sir.
Your view, then, if this court were to find that RM, throughout this process, was a non-governmental private actor, is it your position, then, that all of the issues having to do with the admissibility of this evidence go away, that everything comes in simply because of the fact that he was a non-governmental private actor?
Yes, Your Honor, I think so, because that's really the only allegation here that there was any wrongdoing. So later on, OSI wanted Airman Marlowe out of the investigation altogether. In fact, going back to the point of whether or not he was an agent for the government, he was actually setting up barriers. When they went to search the house...
No, I understand all that, but I just wanted... You said, I think, I need a clearer response. Is it the government's position, then, if RM was a private actor here, that this court does not need to engage in any further legal analysis of any of the issues... legal decisions that were made by the military judge?
That's correct, Your Honor.
What about the CENTCOM thumb drive? Doesn't that still have to come in some way or not?
It would, Your Honor, but if he was a private actor, his brief review of that evidence would also be immaterial, because AB gave it to him, he reviewed it briefly, and then handed it over to OSI. And OSI, again, was not happy that he had done that, because they didn't direct him to do that. But moving on to consent, which is the next big issue here.
Well, wait a minute. Were the focus, was the scope of the search, the private search, and the scope of the official search the same? Or do we have the same problem some of us thought we had in Jones? I mean, in Wicks.
In Wicks, Your Honor? Well, if he was acting as a private...
He was acting as, assume arguendo, he's acting privately.
Then I don't think you have a Wicks issue, Your Honor, because then the government, still, they went forward and they got, then there was no initial bad search. So all of the probable cause that led them to...
Well, but they can't exceed the scope of the private search without a warrant.
They did get...
Eventually.
They eventually got search authorizations. Actually, the next day, on the 18th,
okay,
they got search authorizations for everything.
Okay.
And so, just very quickly, with respect to consent, as far as the Dell laptop, which could be tied to AB, she consented to that on page 142. She specifically consented to that. That's not really an issue, even though the military judge found that was somehow still not adequate consent. She consented to the search of her own laptop. But with respect to the HP laptop and the CENTCOM flash drive, Military Rule of Evidence 314E2 says a person may grant consent to search property when the person exercises control over that property. AB was a resident of the home. The laptop that was found in the home and the flash drive that was found in the home, she could consent to it. She had common authority over those items, just like in U.S. v. Gallagher, where the wife allowed the police to search that briefcase, and the police then found a child pornography in that briefcase. That was sufficient. Even though appellee wasn't actually physically present or able to object to that. That common authority, that's from U.S. v. Rader, 65 MJ 30, that's a case for 2007, as well as Gallagher I mentioned. Those would allow OSI agents to search all of those items. So all the items at issue, even if you find that he was a law enforcement officer, were consent searches. Now, as far as moving on to inevitable discovery and independent source, there's really no factual dispute here that AB was going to go to the police. She saw if you look at her 1168, she saw this evidence in March of 2012, and this is another erroneous.
I thought she saw it in September.
She didn't. If you look at that closely, Chief Judge Baker, she actually saw only pornographic images. She specified in March of 2012 is when she actually saw the child pornography, and she said that's gross. And then if you look at her 1168, she got into a fight with appellee on the 17th, so the day before, which she said was kind of the straw that broke the camel's back, and that's when she started to come forward on all of this. And what did she do? She, even if assuming appellee's argument, she sought out law enforcement. If you believe that he was a law enforcement officer. And even though Marlowe may have encouraged her to go into OSI, independent source is not a but-for test. She went into OSI, and based on that probable cause, Colonel Benza testified on page 102 and 103. This was the magistrate. He said, well, what I remember on this case was that the alleged member's spouse reported some concerns about her husband's involvement in some type of child pornography type activity. That is the independent source. She provided the magistrate with sufficient probable cause the very next day on the 18th of May so that they could go search the home and collect all this. So not only did they have consent, not only was he a private actor, but also there's an independent source argument. And also, if you find that any one of these pieces of evidence is admissible, any one of them, then the independent source doctrine kicks in, because OSI, through normal police procedures, they wouldn't have stopped the investigation if they sent it off to DCFL and found child pornography. Even on her own laptop, they found child pornography that they could tie, it was one image, they could tie to a Pelley, so that would give sufficient probable cause then to go search the home, and they would have eventually found all of the other evidence, even the evidence included in the email and on the Facebook account. So really, that's the email and the Facebook account are a bit of a red herring too, because AB was sitting next to Airman Marlowe the entire time he was looking at this, and that's reflected in the testimony.
Returning to the threshold question, whether Marlowe was a government agent or not, what are your three facts that you point to as the strongest for being indicative that he was not a government agent? And then what is the fact that is hardest for you to address from the standpoint of the appellee's argument?
I think the hardest, Your Honor, would be the fact that he said, I was a cop. But knowing law enforcement officers, even security forces members, it's going to be difficult for them to never say that they're not acting as a police officer. But that's obviously a difficult part for the government's case. But the big things that I would ask you to look at, Your Honor, is that OSI specifically told him not to get involved later on. So that's an important factor, that he was acting on his own and not at the behest of any of his superiors. He had absolutely no training in investigation, so even if he knew that he was going to get a search authorization, or even if he wanted to get a search authorization, he didn't know how to get one. And then also the fact that he left it up to AB to decide what to do. I think those are the three most important facts.
Well, if OSI may have thought he was a pest and an untrained pest at that, but that doesn't really determine whether he's acting as a government agent, does it? The fact that after the fact they told him to scram isn't determinative, is it?
It's not, Your Honor, but I think it's an important factor. I think it's an important factor also that he was out, I don't want to call him a lone wolf, but he was acting on his own, and they were doing everything they could to say, please just step aside, we've got this.
Go back and guard aircraft.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
With this court's permission, I'd like to reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Yep. All right. Counsel for the appellee, please.
Oh, Morning, Chief Judge Baker, members of the court, may it please the court. I am Major Christopher James, along with my co-counsel, Colonel Randall Snow. We represent the appellee, Senior Airman Aaron Buford. The military judge did not abuse her discretion when she suppressed the evidence due to the government's violation of the appellee's Fourth Amendment rights for three reasons. First, Agency Morrow acted as an agent of the government. Next, the evidence would not have been admitted when discovered. And third, Kelly's wife only consented after she was directed to OSI to revoke consent while OSI was searching her home. So in U.S. v. Jacobs, this court's predecessor said an off-duty NCO who was not wearing his uniform, if that his actions were of a private nature, was a government actor. In finding the NCO to be a private actor, that court cited the U.S. v. Belante, a prior CMA case that says a search by a person duly assigned to law enforcement duty and made for the sole purpose of enforcing military law is conducted by a person acting under the authority of the United States. Airman Marlowe was assigned as a security forces officer on 17 May 2012 when Apelli's wife asked him to look at Apelli's fake Facebook profile. Before Airman Marlowe sat down, he suspected Apelli of committing an offense under the UCMJ, most importantly, adultery, and that was also while he was searching Apelli's computer. According to Airman Morrow, his cop training kicked in and he began to gather evidence.
Does it matter? I mean, if you can, does it matter what he was acting at if she consented anyhow to all these searches? Does it make any difference? I mean, he may be acting as a cop, he may be acting as a private individual, but if you've got consent, what difference does it make?
Well, Your Honor, obviously later in the argument, I'll argue that consent does not exist, but...
Yeah, I want to hear. I'd like to hear about consent, but go ahead and finish your argument.
Yes, Your Honor. So he began to search through the messages because in his mind, that's where the people hide evidence. After reviewing the messages, they start taking screenshots because in his words, he knew it was possible to go some places other than cheating. And just in case that fake Facebook account...
Can I step you back for a moment? Are you in agreement or disagreement with the government on the test? The test, it will stipulate that in some manner the government indicated the test is an objective test. It's based on the totality of the circumstances, and it evaluates whether the person involved is acting at the behest, direction, fill in various words here, of the government. Is that the test?
I agree with the first part, Your Honor, as far as at the behest for whether or not they're a private actor or a government actor, no. I mean, I think we can look back at U.S. v. Belante and U.S. v. Jacobs and determine whether or not someone was a private actor or a government actor. And in U.S. v. Daniels, it laid it out and said in light of all circumstances.
Okay, so what's the difference and what's not the difference? And what do you agree on, what don't you agree on?
Well, and I apologize, Your Honor. The later part of what you were saying as far as what the test was, I disagree with that part. If you'd like to read it again, I can.
I'm just making it up. I just want you to tell me what test we should apply there. It's objective, it's totality of circumstances, and what are we looking for? What are we, not the conclusion, but what are we assessing?
We're assessing the factors, the totality of circumstances. When we look at it and we see that
But to what end? I mean, I understand the totality of circumstances, but is the Daniels test the correct one? For example, is that the test you would have us apply?
Yes, Your Honor. I
or is it an or know it when you see it kind of one?
Exactly right, especially in this case, Your Honor.
That was a choice, actually. But so, do you like the Daniels test?
I agree with the Daniels test.
Okay.
Yes, Your Honor.
And so, if it were the case that if the three prongs are objective, totality, and Daniels. That'd be, in your view, the correct law.
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you. You understand how we need to set the law right before we figure out where
Absolutely.
The facts fall.
Okay. Absolutely.
Was this on or off base?
This was on base, Rob.
Was it at Lackenheath or another location?
Honestly, I can't remember if it was Milton Hall or Lackenheath. It was one of the England bases.
Was it the same base that he was posted at?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And was he there on or off duty?
At that time, he was off duty.
Okay. What are the three facts that are strongest in support of your position that he was acting as a government agent? And what's the one or two facts that are weakest?
So the three strongest facts are the fact that he sat down, his cop instincts took over, he started collecting evidence, and he put it onto a thumb drive so he could take it to security forces. He encouraged Pelley's wife to go to security forces. Probably more than three. As far as the...
What's the hardest fact for you to address in terms of the other side of the argument? Or let me then ask you to respond to two of them and see what you say. What about the fact that he's off duty, he's there as a lawnmower to help fix a lawnmower and drink beers? And then secondly, what about the fact that every time he pops up, OSI tells him to go away?
Yes,
or more or less.
So the fact that he's off duty doesn't hurt the argument at all. USB Jacobs, I mean, was an off duty NCO. That doesn't hurt as far as whether he was there to drink beers or not. No, Your Honor. I mean, it was back to Judge Stuckey's question. It doesn't matter. I mean, you're on duty.
So he's like he might as well have been an FBI special agent or someone like...
Absolutely. Okay. He was a law enforcement officer.
So what's your response then to the various facts about his interplay with OSI then?
Well, Your Honor,
they do a no-contact order. They tell him to go away. They think he might have planted the evidence.
Absolutely.
Okay.
But yeah, but the important part about that was is it wasn't until later on in the investigation. I mean, they were perfectly happy whenever he was encouraging Capelli's wife to go to OSI and try to attempt to give the evidence. It wasn't until the point where he suddenly finds the other sent on thumb drive, lies to them, tells them that he hadn't plugged into his computer, and they start wondering whether or not what his intentions are with Capelli's wife.
But whether they're happy that he's collecting evidence for them doesn't determine whether the Daniels test is met.
That is correct, Your Honor, but looking at the totality of circumstances at the beginning of it is just fine. It wasn't until later on whenever OSI became upset with it.
Well, counsel, is it your position that whenever someone who is in fact in law enforcement, okay, they work in law enforcement in some capacity, believes that they are acting as a law enforcement person, that therefore they are a government actor for purposes of this test, even if there is no other indication of governmental encouragement, endorsement, or participation in the search? Do you understand my question?
I think I do. I think you're kind of referring to USB Daniels where it talks about...
Well, that's a test that you said you wanted us to apply, right? And in this case, other than his own subjective intent, right, which you can glean from the record, and I think you could find facts that say he did have the subjective and belief that he was acting as a cop and that he didn't have the subjective belief, right? The facts you can find in either way, abuse of discretion, that's fine. But if the test is a clear indices of of the government's encouragement, endorsement, and participation in the challenge search, which government are we talking about, and what indications are there in this case?
Well, I guess I would go back to the participation prong that cites in USB Daniels, and I want to address what...
Well, I mean, in all these other cases, we have someone other than the person searching, asking them to do something or encouraging them to do something, correct?
Yes, sir.
And here we have someone acting of their own volition. And I'm just asking you, since you want us to use the Daniels test, where is the outside encouragement, endorsement, or participation?
Well, I guess what I was getting for is the Daniels test is the totality of the circumstances. When you look at it, you see the law enforcement...
Well, you don't get to just pick part of the test.
Yes, Your Honor, I understand that. And I guess if that was the case...
I mean, because it's totality of what circumstances, right? Leading us to conclude what, right? And that's the conclusion that we find based on the totality of the circumstances.
Correct. Well, and I guess, and I would go back to the test of USB Vellante, which is whether or not they're a law enforcement officer and they're acting in their capacity as a law enforcement officer.
I guess that's what you would focus on. Now, is there any indication that he ever acted at the direction of OSI?
No, Your Honor. In fact, I mean, I agree with what you said, which was later on they eventually told him to quit doing that.
In your view, would it make a difference to your argument if in his case, irrespective of this particular thing, all people in this individual's situation were instructed by their supervisor. You're not an investigator, you're a gate guard. You can check cars, but that's it. No investigations, no searches, no nothing. But then he goes and he is acting as a cop. Would it change your view of how this case should turn out?
No, Your Honor. And I guess, stepping back, it's something I'm going to be able to talk about, is the fact that it is a 6-2 and a military judge didn't abuse of discretion. So, but that being said, that would go more towards the exclusionary rule for why this shouldn't be excluded and why should I basically teach the government a lesson. I mean, if they wanted to go back and teach in tech school, hey, just so you understand, if you're a gate guard and you're confronted with this situation, get a search warrant. I mean, that's just an easy thing. I mean, that's the same thing, you know, with USB Wicks and USB Flurry and Riley v. California.
But you understand what we're struggling with, right, which is you want us to use totality of the circumstances. He wants us to use totality of the circumstances, but totality of the circumstances to tell us what, right? That's the test part.
Yes, Your Honor. And I guess I would say that the test part is use what you used in or this course of predecessor for Volante, you know, and you used it in Jacobs, and that's, you know, is it a law enforcement officer, and are they acting in their capacity as a law enforcement officer?
But how do you determine whether acting in their capacity as a law enforcement officer?
Yes, Your Honor, I understand that. That's when you have to go back.
Right, which is, I mean, it's one thing if it's his duties, right?
Correct.
And it's another thing if it's explicitly not his duties. And it's yet a third thing if it's may or may not be his duties, but he thinks that he's acting as part of his duties.
Yes, Your Honor, and I guess even going back to his duties, I mean, as a law enforcement officer, he was still trained to uphold the law. And I mean, he already at that point, whenever he sat down, knew that.
So is it a per se test that whenever a law enforcement person that works in law enforcement participates in a search of something, irrespective of anything else, it is a government search?
That would imply that if he was off base driving down Truth Boulevard and he saw some car speed by him, he could pull that car over, right?
No,
search the car, and he'd say, "Well, he's a government actor."
He wouldn't have jurisdiction in that case, Your Honor. I mean, but if it's on base.
So any MP on base has jurisdiction to run around and search stuff?
Not
That's
at
sort
all.
Of a frightening thought, but.
It is. I agree with that. Not at all. Just like he didn't have. He couldn't. That's the whole issue to begin with. I mean, he was not supposed to be searching through Appelli's locked Facebook account.
But doesn't that imply that he's then not acting as a government actor?
How so? I guess I'm not tracking.
Well, whether he's acting pursuant to his law enforcement authority or not, was this consistent with his law enforcement authority?
It was not consistent with his job, no. I mean, he was a gate guard, but he had conducted searches before.
So, counsel, could you articulate what steps RM took that are inherently law enforcement oriented as compared to what a concerned friend who is computer savvy and who had watched a few episodes of NCIS might have done if person said, "Listen, looks like my husband's cheating on me," and so forth. What steps did RM take that we can point to as a court and say, this is what made him acting in the capacity as law enforcement?
Yes, Your Honor, and I understand it's going to be a small distinction as far as a person that watched NCIS or whatever else, but that being said, his statements are, his instincts kicked in. He
So that's, isn't that subjective at that point rather than objective if he's saying my instincts kicked in?
My instincts, yes, that is subjective. The fact that he's collecting evidence, he's putting it on a thumb drive, he's taking it to security forces.
Well, didn't he say to AB, I encourage you to report this, but he didn't bring this up the chain. He didn't deliver it to anyone.
No, Your Honor, he did not. He encouraged her to go, and that was his own testimony.
But how does that differ from what a friend might do?
A friend would tell them to do whatever you want to do, and I understand that there's a small distinction, but he's encouraging her because he knows that there is evidence of a bigger crime here.
But what about his statements to the effect that he was going to leave it up to her, that if she decided not to report it, that he was not going to report it?
Honestly, Your Honor, we don't know. We know that he encouraged her to go and she decided to go. And that he drove her there and that he watched her kid while they were there. I mean, everything points to her reason to go was because he encouraged it. And it wasn't abuse of discretion for the military judge to file analyzing.
Her reason to go was because he encouraged her. Her reason to go was because she was mad at her husband.
But, Your Honor, she wasn't, I mean, she wasn't that mad.
She had supposedly seen something of this before, and it didn't motivate her to do anything, and now suddenly they had a fight, and there she is with the SPs.
Yes, Your Honor. She's sitting down over at a friend's house, with the friend being Courtney Hammond, and all that Aaron Marlowe knows, the security forces officer, is that there's a fake Facebook profile and potentially that committed adultery.
Well, she dragged her computer over to the friend's house for some reason, probably because she was mad at her husband.
Your Honor, there's no evidence in the record as far as why the computer was there.
Why the computer was there at all.
But she also showed this to CH, not just to RM, right?
We don't know exactly what Ms. Hammond saw, Your Honor.
But we do know from the record that she also brought the computer over and showed it to CH, correct?
Well, and I think if we go back and look at the record, Your Honor, I'd have to check it. My understanding, my recollection, is that Aaron Marlowe couldn't even say which computer it was. So I'm not sure that the evidence actually points to it as far as what computer was over there, whether or not it was Apelli's wife's computer, or it was Ms. Hammond's computer, or whatever else. Because, as we know, we're talking about an online account. So at that point, I mean, it doesn't matter which computer you use. You can use any computer to access the online account. That was the crux of it. Whether or not she dragged her computer over there or not, I can't write away from the record whether or not she actually did that.
Could you discuss consent?
Yes, sir. So it's important first in reference to the Centon thumb drive that, as the military judge pointed out, and as Aaron Marlowe said, he wasn't sure exactly who gave him the Centon thumb drive, whether it was Apelli's wife or whether it was Ms. Hammond. So it was not an abuse of discretion for the military judge to find that there was no consent, because there's no evidence of who actually consented and gave him the Centon thumb drive. So in reference to the Facebook and the email account, Apelli's wife cannot consent to that information, as this court held in U.S. v. Compton, where there's no evidence of shared use or common authority. An individual has a reasonable expectation of privacy and files kept on a personally owned computer.
Didn't she have the password?
Yes, Your Honor, but there's no evidence in the record of how that was obtained. Apelli's wife could not testify during the motions hearing. But
isn't that a pretty strong indicator that she had access?
It's a strong indicator that she had access, but not why.
Does it matter?
Yeah, absolutely, Your Honor. It does matter. Whenever you look at the fact that it was password protected, as this court said in U.S. v. Rader, and it pointed to a couple other, I believe it was Third Circuit Court cases, as far as whether or not something is locked and whether someone has common authority, is if it's password protected.
Well, my email account is password protected, but my husband has my password, so it's protected as against the rest of the world, but not as against him.
Yes, Your Honor, but it wouldn't make sense for him to give out his username and password to his fake Facebook profile account that she is so upset about that she found. So if this was the normal email account, hey, we have a shared email account, great. Maybe there was something, but it was still an abuse of discretion.
Did he testify for the limited purposes with respect to this search and seizure issue?
No, Your Honor.
Counsel, yes. It seemed that you just said that it was unclear to whom AB gave the thumb drive, whether it was to CH or to...
No, Your Honor. It was unclear from Aaron Marlowe's testimony where he received the thumb drive.
But I'm looking in the joint appendix, his statement from 19 June 2012, where he says, approximately 3 weeks ago on the 4th of June, AB told me about a thumb drive she found at her house. After giving it to me,
yes, Your Honor.
I plugged it in.
If you look at JA 98 and 123 through 24, his testimony is that he was not sure who actually gave it to him. And that was 98 and 123.
So his testimony was different than
correct.
His statement.
Yes, Your Honor. In regards to the Dell computer, she only gave consent by she, I mean Appellee's wife, at the behest of Aaron Marlow. And also, she revoked consent during the search. So Aaron Marlow testified that she became upset at OSI during the search, and OSI themselves thought that it was a problem with consent, and they went and obtained a search warrant, which shows that they thought that consent was revoked at that point. So this is similar to U.S. v. Wallace, and I see that my time has expired. Your Honor, I'm going to finish this point. This is similar to U.S. v. Wallace, where the appellant in that case became upset and revoked consent, and this court held that the consent was revoked. It did so then, and it needs to do so now.
Any other questions up here? Okay. Thank you, Counselor.
Thank you, Your Honor.
The government has the opportunity for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just with respect to that last point, Evie never revoked consent. On pages 73 and 97, Airman Marlow testified specifically she never revoked consent. He asked the agents where the warrant was. They had the warrant. They just had to bring it physically. But he said, trial counsel questioned him a number of times, did she ever revoke consent? And he said no. I'd also like to point this court to the joint appendix at page 45 when looking whether or not the probable cause was still good for the search authorizations, even assuming it was tainted from the beginning. And there's trial counsel's talking to the special agent. He says, do you remember whether or not you were actually personally able to view the screenshots made by Ms. Buford and Aaron Marlow? And he said, not initially, not until after we received a hard drive from DCFL. They didn't even look at the contents of what was saved, the screenshots. So the probable cause to base that, to get those search authorizations was based entirely on what AB had told OSI, not on anything that they had screenshotted. So it's a complete red herring, Your Honors. And the last big point I'd like to make is that the military judge never conducted a good faith analysis. She never looked at whether or not these, even if the search authorizations were somehow tainted. This is the lowest rung on the ladder. She never looked at whether or not the agents themselves were acting in good faith. And it's clear the agents did not go to the magistrate with bad information, reckless information, or try to mislead the magistrate. They were acting in good faith and not in concert with Airman Marlow. And the big question is, if you adopt Appellee's argument, is what else could the agents have done to cure this? If you assume that there was some kind of initial violation of statutory constitutional rights, what else could they have done? They did everything correctly. They got search authorizations, to be sure, even though she had consented to everything and to the consent of the home. And I see that my time is almost up. Chief Judge Baker, may I briefly conclude? Thank you. Whether it was the fact that Airman Marlow was a private actor, that AB frustrated any reasonable expectation of privacy in the accounts, that AB consented to all searches, that the agents were acting in good faith reliance on the search authorization issued, or the fact the evidence would have been inevitably discovered, the military judge patently failed to address these issues properly and erroneously found that all electronic media be suppressed. Because the government never violated Appellee's statutory or constitutional rights, this court should reverse the judgment of the court below. Thank you.
Thank you. The court thanks both counsel, and the case is submitted and all that, and we'll stand in recess until 10:25. Thank you very much.
All right. The court stands in recess until 10:25.